Hi, everybody. I'm Debbie Davis, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Debbie.
And I'm so excited to be here this morning. And I'm excited you're here. I mean, 8:30 Friday morning, this is for the dedicated and the desperate, okay? I'm telling you, it's just amazing. Thank you very much. And I want to thank the committee for inviting me. I love talking and sharing my experience about the concepts and the traditions and of course, the steps, too. But the concepts are something we just don't really have a general, ongoing conversation about. So that's why I'm really excited about that today. I also want to thank Teresa for being an awesome hostess, introducing me. And, of course, you kind of get a bump up with a hostess when you sponsor that person. So it really, you know, it helps to get that assignment. I also want to thank Lee and Jim and Gail and John for making a 12-step call on me last night. We were working desperately to get the PowerPoint going because the concepts need pictures, okay? It's a lot easier to understand them with pictures, and trust me, as much as I like being the center of attention, today we're going to do a little PowerPoint thing. The message is much more important than the messenger today, but I'll make sure I'll steer it back to me now and then. So, to give you a little background, my sobriety date is February 8th, 1976. I've been walking with you for 42 years. Like Billy, I got sober when I was young. I love being 42 years sober and 39 years old. You know, I love that math. But I was chronologically 18 when I got sober. I have never had a legal drink of alcohol, and I hope I never do. And as long as I stay in the middle of that circle, in the middle of the herd, and in that triangle with an active, good siding to that three-inch triangle, is pretty sure that I'll stay sober. My home group is the Primary Purpose Group in Dublin, California. That's in the East Bay of San Francisco. And I'm a very active member of that group. And there's some other members of that home group here, too. And my sponsor of almost 32 years is a woman named Millie G. from Southern California with 49 years sober. And 96 years old, still going to 5 meetings a week and active in all of them. So that's a little bit of the experience and background I bring to you. But my first introduction to the concepts was probably about 2.5 years sober. As most people, for a long time, we didn't even have the window shade to even kind of know what it was. More and more groups are getting the window shade up. I've kind of guilted a few of them into getting the window shade up, just kind of noticing it was absent. If it does nothing else, it makes somebody know that we have 3-somethings and not just 2. They might not ever know what it is, the con what's, but I don't care. They know we have 3 legacies, not 2. And so my first introduction to that was about 2.5 years sober when we were bidding at an ICKIPA conference in Atlanta in 1979 or 78. And the question was, how many of you have been in service? And we, you know, sometimes in different parts of the country, words are used, and we said, well, we're not sure what that means. And they said, well, like GSR and secretary. Well, lots of people have, but I thought this service thing, this GSR thing. And it was like this attitude I had, is there something going on without my knowing about it? You know, I had that, I want to be a part of everything. And that launched my curiosity and a very dedicated pursuit to find out about this thing, because people, we used to have one, I think go talk to so-and-so. I mean, it was so vague, so unparticipated in at this time, at least in that area. And so the result of that was when you got somebody young and enthusiastic, things get rolling. And that's what we got to do, is we got to kind of reignite that area in general service and enthusiasm. And my love for the concepts in general service really began there. Part of my recovery in sponsorship is that I take people through all three legacies. Because I feel if I only give them the steps, because I know what the traditions and concepts have done for me, they've just blown the doors wide open. I feel like I'm kind of cheating them if I don't give them those other two portions and the service manual. One of the things I ask all of them to do, sometime in their recovery journey, sometime, I'm not telling you when, because the arrangements of our life change, is to be a GSR for your group. Have that experience. Get to introduce to people you would never, ever get to know otherwise. Be an intergroup rep. Again, get to know your local community a lot more. And the other is to be a part of an H&I or hospitals and institutions in our area, corrections, treatment facilities, some panel like that, to those who cannot get to meetings and are confined, for that experience. Because I want it all. I wanted it all drinking. I want it all in sobriety. And this is some of the ways that I've gotten to do that. I asked Teresa to read about the three legacies and that the best is yet to come. And I'm not like implying I'm the best that's yet to come for you today. But the point being is that if you've never been involved in service work, I really hope that by the end of this weekend or today, maybe you will stop and think, you know what, the next time they ask for, we need a GSR, that it'll be your hand that goes up or your name in the availability list for the next experience for you. So that's a little bit about how I came to understand about the concepts. So what we're going to do, you know, is we're going to talk about what led up to the concepts. So now kind of let you look at those. So what led up to the concepts? Well, I'm not going to obviously do any kind of history because Gail's going to cover that beautifully in the next session. But in 1934, we just simply start with Bill Wilson getting sober. In 35, June 10th, Dr. Bob gets sober. And AA, we call as co-founded. That's what we take as our birthday. In 1938, there's about 40 people sober in the world by the method of one alcoholic carrying the message or helping another alcoholic. About 40 people. And, I mean, again, many of the meetings or groups we go to are over 40 people. And I look around the group and think, with this group of people, and again, these are people with much more than just a few, 3 years of sobriety, would this group of selfish, self-centered alcoholics be thinking about other people, how we're going to carry this message internationally and have uniform literature and help other groups and help others? Would we be thinking in a bigger scale or just about how I'm going to get about to the next day? So I'm so thankful that they had vision and they were looking ahead so that you and I could be here today. And what happened? This happened. This began our first foray into our public information, really. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that Billy mentioned last night was published in April of 1939. It contained our first legacy of the 12 steps. In the foreword to first edition, oddly enough, when you read it, there are several points of the traditions mentioned in spirit, if nothing else, and we're not even going to be introduced to the traditions until several years later. But it's almost prophetic how many traditions are talked about in that foreword to first edition. In 1946, that's when we got the first introduction of the 12 traditions. And again, there's fun history about that, which time is not really going to allow today. But Bill introduced them through the grapevine as the title was called An Alcoholics Anonymous Tradition of Relations, 12 points to assure our future. In a way, I wish sometimes today we would introduce, and now Joe will read, the 12 points to assure our future. I have a feeling there'd be a little bit more pow and impact to it. But right now, that's what we read. And in 49, the short form of the 12 traditions was created, and that's what's most commonly read in meetings anyway. In 1950, our first international convention, we're 15 years old, and the 12 traditions will be adopted. And our second legacy, unity, was born. In 1951, we begin the first General Service Conference. It'll just be United States and Canada, and it still is today. And it would be started as a five-year experiment. And in 62, the development of the concepts were done as the result of seeing how that conference was evolving, its purpose. And that's a lot of what we'll be talking about a little bit today. So our third legacy in 1962 was born. With the exception of a few people here, Clancy, and there could be some other people, most of us got sober after 1962. So we came here, and it was all the work was done. All the heavy lifting was done. But that doesn't mean our responsibility ended. It began. It began. And it begins again today. The short form of the concepts was in 74, and you can find them today in the back of the fourth edition, Appendix 7. The concepts record the why of our service structure, and they provide that checks and balances system. Everybody, every group is accountable to somebody, some body. If I'm on a committee, I'm reporting to someone. We're all accountable. There is no, we don't have the system of somebody's at the top giving directives to the little people below. It really is an inverted triangle, and we'll see that in a minute. So the concepts are to guide our business structure. What if you use these phrases in maybe your business life, or your group life, or your home life? All of these phrases are found in the 12 concepts. Compromise cheerfully. That's a good one. I like that. I like the cheerful part of it. Charity for occasional mistakes. Spiritual cooperation. Personal spiritual examples. Is that how we can lead by? Harmonious conduct. Grace to exert an effective restraint. That's good, right? Cheerfully accept instead of resentfully accept. Selfless good spirit. You know, these are all really great, I think, lead-ins to, you know, a new attitude I can bring to the table, whatever the table may be. So what's your concept of the 12 concepts? So I'm going to pretend I know that there's people well-versed in the 12 concepts. I know we have at least one past trustee in the room, possibly more. Many of you have been maybe delegates or somewhere in the general service structure. But I'm going to just pretend I'm talking to people who don't know anything. That's why it's called Concepts 101. And to help get an idea of what this is, and first of all, where do you find out about them? Well, so we have the manual. So there's the AA service manual combined with the 12 concepts. It's now printed every 2 years. It just recently came out in like September, October, so you can get your fresh copy now. You can also get them a wonderful illustrated pamphlet. Now, trust me, I understand that you're not going to get your new concepts book and curl up with a cup of cocoa in front of the fire and read it. It's not quite as engaging by yourself. But like sex, if you do it with someone else, it's much more enjoyable, okay? And then when you do it with a group of people, you know, reading the concepts, come on. It really takes it to a new level, okay? So, but there are amazing nuggets and jewels in the 12 concepts. So I don't, when I first, well, actually, whether someone's experienced or not, I like to try to take them through in groupings, not numerically. I've gotten to share the concepts. I started actively taking sponsees through it about 10, 11 years sober. And I would do, like you do the steps, you do them numerically, you do the traditions numerically, but somehow, for me, the concepts just, there was just something about it. So I thought, well, I'm going to group it because it seems like there's three groups. And the first one is the grouping of the delegations of responsibilities. So as you see on the screen, on the left side is what the general service structure would look like. But most of the time, we really relate to something a lot more, or I understand things a lot more when I can relate to it. So on the right-hand side, I put on what that might look like at the group level, okay? So the delegation of responsibilities, the first concept being the ultimate authority and final responsibility. So on the general service level, that's the fellowship as a whole. At the home group level, that would be all the people attending the meeting. Okay, so let's say there's 100 people in my home group, using that as an example. And we pass on the delegation of responsibilities because the over 1 million of us in the U.S. and Canada cannot be effective in decision making, so we have a voice through our general service rep who they eventually elect the delegate that attends concept two, the annual business meeting. In our home group, it would be, okay, we've got our business meeting tonight, and of those 100 people, maybe 30 people will attend the business meeting. So those other 70 are saying, we're going to let you make the decisions. Go ahead. And maybe they don't go because it's not their home group, or they're just visiting, or they could care less. All of the above. So that's concept two. So we delegate from the big majority to a smaller group of people. Well, that group can't be effective in carrying out decisions, and so they delegate to concept six. On the general service side, that would be the 21-member board of trustees. And on the home group side, that might be your group secretary that you hold accountable for the well-functioning of the group, or maybe you have a steering committee. Well, again, they can't do all the tasks, so they delegate to... On the general service side, we have two corporate boards that focus on AA World Services or Grapevine. At the home group, we delegate to individuals the different service commitments. You've got coffee, you've got greeter, you've got birthdays, you've got, you know, literature. And so we're focused on fulfilling those commitments to make the group run efficiently and effectively so the message of Alcoholics Anonymous can be carried out. And then we're all guided by concept seven, which is the paperwork. On the general service side, that's bylaws and, of course, traditions. At the home group, that might be your group minutes and the motions your group has made about certain things. So again, you're already doing concepts 1, 2, 6, 8, and 7, and you don't even know it. Well, then there's another view of the delegations. There's a guy, Jim from Florida, actually has this upside-down triangle as a T-shirt. Go, Jim. That's great. So there you see the groups go send a general service rep to the districts. They go to area assemblies. They elect a delegate that goes to concept two. You see that pyramid's going down. The further down, generally, the smaller the grouping and the more responsibility. Work your way down the pyramid, not up. Then there's another section I like to call the spiritual tools. And again, these are a lot easier to sort of understand. Right of decision, right of participation, right of appeal and minority opinion, leadership. We're going to end with that one. And then we have what I call the administration guides. In concept 10, the responsibility should be matched with the authority to carry it out. In concept 11, get the best people and define the structure. And in 12, our warranties, our six warranties, which for me is like the summary of the concepts. So to break them down just a tad more in a couple of them, in the first concept, we, in our U.S. structure, we get a GSR. They attend a district meeting, which is monthly. Then they'll probably go to three or four area meetings a year. And every 2 years, they're going to elect a delegate, which we'll send to that concept to General Service Conference. But the key question is, does your group have a GSR? If not, you're not really a part of. You're just your little group on your local corner. But when you have a GSR, your voice is heard. And sometimes it's not always easy to get a GSR. But I think if you show the enthusiasm for being more a part of, instead of, we don't care about that, that's for those people. And I realize there's going to be meetings that do that, groups, because I've seen a meeting become a group, and I've seen a group become a meeting. And groups, you will find, generally will have that GSR. They're more involved with all of AA. But without a GSR, you're not connected to the Worldwide Fellowship. And if you do have a GSR, do you support them? Do you support them financially? Make it possible for them to go to the assemblies and to be a full participant? Do you support them in the discussions? I know that sometimes what we have found successful is, okay, so you have a GSR and you allow them to make announcements at the group level, not just at the business meeting. Why are we hiding information about General Service at the business meeting? We give it to the whole group. And what we do is also, when we get the agenda topics, we'll say, we have them in. Can I see a show of hands of who would be willing to participate in the discussion? And when you put your hand up, you're committing yourself. If you say, see me after the meeting, you'll be the only one standing there, okay? That is ineffective. Ineffective. And so we find that if you get a show of hands, it begins to, oh, well, they're going. Oh, they're participating. Okay, great. I will too. I won't be the only one. And so this is what we have found really effective to get people involved. Do you give them time to make the reports? Well, we got a GSR report. Hurry up about it. Give them time. Now, that doesn't mean a half an hour. But allow them the time to carry a message. So I hope that, again, as I said earlier, if you don't have a GSR, maybe the next time it becomes available and open, you'll do it. Or maybe start off as your alternate, kind of get your feet in the water, so that when you become GSR, you're up and running right now, not in 6 months. Because when you're first in it, you don't even know how to spell GSR. You know, there is, it's the alphabet soup of AA. Crazy, I know. So I hope you have a GSR. We delegate to second concept, that's our annual business meeting. In 2018, there were 136 members. As I made reference earlier in my home group, when we have our business meeting, there's maybe about 30 in attendance. We delegate to concept six. On the general service side, that's our 21-member board of trustees. We have seven non-alcoholic, or what we call Class A, trustees. We have 14 Class B. And I'm not going to go into the breakdown of those because we're just really doing 101 here. But the easy way to remember that is the non-alcoholics Class A. A often stands for amateurs. Okay? And Class B, B stands for boozers. Okay? So it's an easy way to remember the two. Okay? In our home group, we'll hold the secretary accountable to make sure that, you know, our meeting is open, the commitments are filled. We hold them accountable, but again, the board and the secretary can't do all of the tasks, and so we delegate to Concept 8. We have the two corporate boards on the general service side, and we have the different individual worker bees like myself doing the tasks. With Concept 7, that paperwork would be charters and bylaws and, of course, the traditions. For the group, it's the minutes and motions, of course, the 12 traditions as well. A group might also have bylaws. A fellowship might have bylaws or an Alano club. What we've also done is we've created what we call a motions synopsis category. In fact, I just was reviewing it the other day because, first of all, it's very fun to encourage the incoming secretary. If you want to know the history of our group, read our motions, what we've passed. We're 20 years old. I've been there 18. That's when we started keeping minutes. Seems to be a correlation to that, me arriving and we keep minutes. Okay, so we keep minutes, and then we pull out any motions we make so it's much easier to find. Because I don't know about your memory, but my memory fades. I think it was 5 years ago when we decided X. Or it was this amount of money we agreed to. And when you go back into those motions that state the facts, often it is not correct. So it's a great way for a new secretary to learn about their group that they're going to be in leadership of. It's a great reference point also in order to stop reinventing that wheel or recreating it. So we have found that really helpful to have a motions synopsis part page. In Concept 3, so now we get into things that we can really understand a lot better. The right of decision. When you're given a commitment, it can't be something that you have to constantly get approval for. So, for example, the coffee maker in your group, let's say part of their duty is to buy coffee. Well, they're usually by UBAN or Columbia, whatever's maybe at Costco, the large brand. But let's say you get the new coffee maker in and they say, it's time to zip this thing up a little bit. We need some Starbucks in here. Well, we just went from about $2 or $3 a can, a gallon of coffee, or a pound of coffee, I should say, to $13 a pound of coffee. Well, that's now impacting other things. That's impacting the distribution, the finances. And so that is, if you're just switching brands and they're pretty well similar in maybe one's on sale, great. But if you're going to make that kind of a different impact, that's outside your scope. And you need to get the group approval on something like that. And if the group thinks it's much better to have Starbucks coffee than make distribution, oh, well, I don't know how much longer they'd be my group, but because I'm all for more distribution. We drink anything. I mean, come on, really? Seriously. So anyway, that's an example of right of decision. Columbia or UBAN, but going outside the scope, would need to have consultation. Another example of that is a group I used to go to regularly had a quarterly gratitude breakfast, and they had it for many years. Started off with the secretary, it's only four times a year, right? So the secretary would be for a two-year commitment, and it was just that group hosting, and they'd invite the area, community, have a speaker. And then a few years go by, a few terms go by, and by group conscience, they decided to have a one-year term for the secretary. And while later the group conscience said, well, what we'd like to do is invite a co-group. We'll be the kind of the major host, but they'll bring the two 10-minute speakers. They'll bring their kind of energy and people and stuff. And so the very last secretary, and there's a reason this was the last secretary, he got up and he said, we're going back to two-year commitments, and we're going to eliminate the co-host group. Now, the people, many of them had been working on it for a long time, had the mentality, I'm signing up for another year. And one of them asked, well, can't we have a group conscience on this? And the reply was, no, I have the right of decision. Well, needless to say, it only lasted 1 year. With that kind of misuse of that authority, there was no willingness to back this person up, which we learn in leadership. There was no group conscience. We went from a group conscience for a loving God to a dictatorship. And that just doesn't play well with most of us. So that's some of the examples of what right of decision might look like. Right of participation. Each group will decide who voting members are. At the General Service Conference, all members in attendance are voting members. But maybe in your home group, you have other guidelines. Maybe I've been to places where you need to attend 3 consecutive monthly business meetings before you're a voting member. I've seen other places where certainly I can sit in, but I am not a voting member or a contributor. In our particular group, we feel, hey, if you're willing to stay till 9:30 at night when we get started and stand, we put all the chairs away so there's no dallying around, yakking away the night. We get right after the business. That you're welcome to stay and participate. So that's the autonomy of the different groups. But participation, for most of us, really, one of the reasons that Bill was found this so important is because that spiritual need of belonging. You know, Steve talked last night about desperately wanting to go to that lunch and that dinner. And many times driving partway there and then turning around. Even though it's everybody's welcome, we just still like that private, personal, special invitation. Like Steve said, we've been fighting over who's going to get to sit next to you. You know, that kind of enthusiasm that I'm going to be there. And Bill also reminds us that there are no second-class AA members. And when I look at that in a personal way, are there times that I have treated someone like a second-class member? Maybe a repeat relapser. Oh, God. There they are again. I may not have shown that outwardly, but I may have thought that inwardly. Have I treated someone I'm not, you know, that fond of with kind of that hello across the way? I said hello, you know, I can justify that. They didn't hear it, but I know I said it, you know. And have I treated anybody like that? Have I felt like I've been treated like that? That's usually when I really have an awareness, is when I feel the sting of something and I think, how many times have I maybe done that to somebody? And that's when the awareness of change comes to me. So, right of participation. And then we have the right of appeal and minority opinion. Right of appeal basically is addressing that, you know, if you feel there's a wrong that you have, a right without worrying about being fired or being in trouble by addressing something. And yet, if it's part of your responsibility and you're being kind of called on the carpet for not doing it, then, you know, that is something that you need to be mindful of as well. But the minority opinion is very powerful because what that does is it allows people like myself who are black and white, right or wrong, yes or no, to see all the colors in between. I need to hear the minority opinion. I need to hear the quiet voices. Because I can be and hear the loud ones. But it's the quiet ones. And a good secretary or a good business leader will make sure that all the voices are heard before we, you know, duplicates are done. And what I find is it's so valuable and important, especially if I have the minority opinion. It looks like this is going in a direction, but I don't quite feel that way about it. But, you know, I want people to like me and all that. But I'm really doing the group conscience a disservice because I'm not presenting another point of view. So a couple years ago or so, we had a business meeting. I was not there, but this story was related to me, and I've seen this happen, so I knew it to be right on. And so we had a vote, and it was real evident this was the right way to go. And one of our members, one of the founders of our group, kind of pipes up and says, "Do we really want to do that? You know, so my sponsee goes, you're such a poop stirrer, okay? Can't swear from the podium. So you stir it up. You know what I'm talking about. And I'm like thinking, he does this all the time. So afterwards, she's like, dang, I got to make an amends to him. So she makes amends, and he says, look, I agree with the direction it was going. But the reason I brought that up is because I wanted people to really think about what they were doing and not just kind of blindly go. And I really appreciated that because, again, if there is a minority opinion, maybe the herd is too strong and I might be afraid to say it. Another point is, am I making it a safe place for your minority opinion to be heard? If someone wants to speak that, again, I'm not that fond of, for example, they'll never know that. That's important to me, that I give them the same attention and focus and nodding or whatever's appropriate as I do to someone I like. Because if I make it unsafe to talk about things that are not maybe so fun or different or scary to say, then they may not be done. If they start talking and I go, oh, God, and I'm talking to somebody else, I'll tell you, that happened to me, I'd shut down. I'm done. So I want to make it, I have a responsibility to make this a safe place for people to share that minority opinion in. If you've got one, don't hold back. Many of us I know have seen where the vote's taken, and then you say, is anyone who is in the minority want to say anything? And they've given the one chance, and maybe they do, and they say this or that, and you say, does anyone in the majority want to change their vote? Well, if they do, then you revote one more time, and then that's it. But if that person had said that before we voted, perhaps there wouldn't have been a need for another vote. So that's why I encourage you to go ahead and to, you know, speak up when you have the minority opinion. In concept 10, our kind of administrative things, to match the responsibility with the authority to carry it out. It's kind of like, again, using the coffee maker. All of our groups have a coffee maker. But if I asked your group and your group and your group, what are the duties of the coffee maker, I guarantee you they would all be different. They would all be different. But if I am coming to the table with no information, I'm probably going to do coffee the way I did at the last place, for example. And maybe I'm stepping on the toes of somebody else's commitment, or I'm not doing the full commitment, because I don't know it. I'm just doing what I know to do. So what we've done is we've put together job descriptions that make it very easy. Not only that, it makes it consistent. And that way we do it consistently so that when we have to fill in, if you've done it before, things didn't all of a sudden change and get rearranged. It's very consistent on what we do. The other thing about that is that when you have that job description in writing, it makes a difference because verbally it will change. I'll forget something, I'll add something, I won't remember what they told me. So that written job description seems to have a really good way. Again, one of these groups that I used to attend, we had the treats person. And she was, not by profession, but you thought she was a professional baker. Oh my God, she brought the coolest treats. They were little cupcakes all decorated up. And we had a budget of $8 or $9, and she loved baking. So we'd get this gorgeous presentation every week. We hated when she had to rotate out. So we vote in a new cookie person, and that person comes in. Well, apparently they had not gotten the job description. So they're bringing in these beautiful, gorgeous, professionally looking slash done cupcakes. And after about 3 weeks, the treasurer comes to me and says, we're getting like $35, $40 weekly bills for treats. I said, oh my God, I don't think she knows. Probably there's a budget to that. Obviously, we need to pay her what she has spent, but now from this point on. And so we said, you know, I don't think you were aware. Here is the budget. You're more than welcome to bring these in, but we'll only pay up to $9 for that. So as the result of now educating her about her responsibilities from that point on, we got the crappy cookies brought in. So, yeah, that's how that worked. With concept 11, get the best people for the job. How many times have we maybe voted someone in because, well, they're cute. I'd like looking at that every week, you know. They mean well. They're due. It's their turn. You know, am I really going to do my group the best service? Again, sending someone who's a GSR who's got about 24 days sober. We've heard the stories. My sponsor took me. I was, you know, a minute sober. We went to my first assembly, and I've been in general service flying ever since. We've heard those stories, but those aren't usually beneficial for the group. And so we think about get the best people for the job. And then we have, you know, in the service manual, we have, you know, what defines more the composition and the qualifications and so forth. In concept 12 are 6 warranties. And this is kind of, to me, a general summary. So in the first warranty, we talk about observe the spirit of the AA tradition, taking great care that the conference never becomes a seat of perilous wealth or power. Well, the groups will never make that happen, I'll tell you that. In the year ending 2017, the groups only, that doesn't include memoriams or personal contributions, only contributed $6.7 million, and our expenses were $16.7 million. Oops. A little bit of a shortfall there. Self-support. 40.4% of the listed groups contributed something. That'd almost be like from this section over, you contributed something. What happened to you guys? It's a real shocker when we find out what we really are and are not doing. And so was your group one of the 43.7% that contributed or not? You can find that out. You don't have to interrogate your treasurer, but if you're not getting some kind of financial report, it's okay to ask, where is the money going that I contribute? But then again, let's ask ourselves, are we still putting a buck in the basket? Many of us have gotten employed and are here at State Line. We've paid expenses to be here. Are we still throwing a buck in the basket thinking that's sufficient? 42 years ago when I got sober, it might have been, but it's not in 2018. So think about, how about a dollar per legacy? Or the price of your favorite cup of coffee that you bring into the meeting. Just a thought. An encouragement. Our treasurer said that if every one of us this year contributed to the General Service Office on our own, $7.40, we'd be totally self-supporting. Wow, that's so doable. That is so doable. But we generally fall far short of that. So again, some thoughts to take back to your group, to take to your own self. Am I participating? Can I bump my contribution up a little bit more? It begins with me. That sufficient operating funds be an ample prudent reserve. We have about 9.5 months worth of prudent reserve, $14.3 million. That none of the conference members ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over others. That all important decisions be reached by discussion. Very important to have the discussion. We've kind of talked about that. Vote, and whenever possible, substantial unanimity. It's easy to debate on a 51-49, but it's hard when it's two-thirds. No conference action ever be personally punitive or an incitement. And that we never perform and act like government, remaining democratic in thought and action. Now my favorite concept. If you have, I can't tell you how many times I have pointed people to this concept for leadership, having trouble with my boss, employees, co-workers, whatever. Everybody is going to be a leader sometime. You might be a secretary, you might be a head of a committee, big or small. Leadership is going to be in the part of all of our worlds at some time. I don't know if any of you have ever been a secretary, let's say secretary of a group, most of us have, and you've had many helpful, unsolicited suggestions, perhaps, right? How many times have you given those unsolicited suggestions? I probably gave them a lot more than I got them, to tell you the truth. But leadership guidelines, boy, I'll tell you, they make you grow up. And I've needed growing up. I've needed to get that tougher skin, allow things to just kind of move away. And this is how I have, the things that I've tried to do is in concept 9. Put the principles, plans, and policies into actions, want to back them up. Remember the guy I was telling you about the gratitude breakfast? He wasn't a leader. He became a dictator. Nobody wanted to do this. Originates plans, policies, and ideas, but always is open to ideas and gives credit where it's due. Doesn't pass the buck. Oh, this is one that I struggle with. My go-to is blame something or somebody else. Completely unrelated. I just wish one time I could blame them, but no, that doesn't work. Determines when and is willing to stand for what's right. Does not oppose just for the sake of opposition. We've all heard those. Let me just play devil's advocate, right? No, you are the devil's advocate, you think. Yeah. This is hard. Know that very prideful or angry people can also be right. Ugh. It's so hard to hear someone that's yelling at you. It's so hard to hear that. But most of the time what I found with the angry people, they just want to be heard. I don't have to take it in. I don't have to emotionally adopt what they're saying. But most of the time my experience has been they just want to be heard. And I can just simply say, uh-huh, okay, are you done? Uh-huh, okay, see you later. I mean, I can just as easily as that. Know when you got to give and take. Compromise cheerfully. We mentioned that earlier. But then know when you have to stand firm. Most relationships are about compromising. And sometimes there's just some things you just can't do or you just need to do. And you have to know that different. One of the great things that my friend Deborah said to me a long time ago, she said, when I got married, she said, you got to pick your battles. And I said, what does that mean? She says, it can't always be your way. You need to know, you know, when to stand and when not. And then criticism. Oh, nobody likes that. Nobody likes to think that they've done anything wrong or inappropriate. And it's a hard lesson to hear that criticism. But Bill calls it the acid test, and boy, is it ever. And there's a couple, three paragraphs in there that are so incredibly powerful. I'm not going to read them to you. I wish I could, but time is not going to have that. But one of the things is it's hard to hear about destructive critics. Here's the summary. Listen carefully. He repeats that. You got to listen carefully. Is there any truth to what they say? Even if it's a little, it's painful. And if there is any truth, we thank them. Oh, that's hard. And get on with our respective inventory, not their inventory. And if there isn't anything, I can ignore it. Oh, well. Or I can try to persuade him to see how I see it. But failing that, and I love that he's like, yeah, but failing that, good luck. We realize they are, and this is his words, not mine, they're too sick to listen and try to forget the whole business. This is a large order, but we must keep trying. If I summarized it in any one phrase, it would be separate the information from the emotional delivery. That is not easy to do. Several years ago, one of my dear, dear friends, we had an ongoing weekly commitment to go through the traditions. She had asked me to do that with her. We were going through the traditions. A few minutes were had gone into the call, and so I called to say, you know, are we on for tonight? I mean, we'd confirmed it last week. And there had been times before when we'd made the commitment and other things happened that I was not notified about. And it felt a little disrespectful, a little, you know, you could have at least called me or something to let me know you're not going to be available. And so this particular night I called and oh, no, we're having a birthday party. And I said, well, okay, that's fine, but I would have appreciated if you would have let me know. I mean, do you write these things down? And that little sarcasm that I put in there, she launched on my inventory, seriously. I mean, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. I generally don't have people speak to me like that because I don't speak to people like that, but I was like in froze mode of shock. And I'm trying very carefully to listen to what she's saying. And it hurt me deeply, deeply. And at the end of that conversation, because I don't know what else to say, I just said, thank you for sharing. You know, I didn't know what else to say. Of course, there was a smart aleck remark after that, she said. But anyway, I really was stunned at that. So anyway, I said, well, I think I'm going to get off the phone now. I knew anything I said was only going to come defensive. I mean, I've just been severely attacked. I'm feeling every bit of it, and I'm naturally going to want to defend myself. So what happened is I wrote down on a page, as best as I could remember the information. And I was looking, you know, because I knew I wasn't going to be sleeping that night if I don't get this crap out of my head and out of my gut. And so I write it out, and I can't do anything with it. It was a couple of days before I even said, Kent, you know, this is what happened. And here's some of the things that she said. Do you see me doing any of these things? And I know that Kent, my husband, not Kent C, but Kent D, I know that Kent would not hesitate to say, well, you know, you are kind of, you know. I know that he wouldn't hesitate to do that because I've asked for that feedback. And so we had a conversation about it, and I kept talking to my sponsor about it. Again, you are the two people who know me the best. There was, throughout the next 13 months, there were a few more conversations that she and I would have, always superficial, always surface, polite conversation. I didn't want to lose the friendship. It meant a lot to me. But on the other hand, I knew there had to be a conversation. This was not something to just push, throw, shove under the rug. This had to be somehow discussed. So finally, the day came, and I knew at that moment, it was 13 months after the conversation. I knew at that moment, I hope this comes out right, but I knew I was in the right spiritual mode. I was in the connection. I knew I was coming from a place of absolute love. Whether you stay my friend or not is really none of my business. But my position about you in my life is love. Whether you want it or not, you can't deny me from feeling love toward you. And I brought up and I said, I want to share something with you. But trust me, if you ever start the word, I want to talk to you about something, you've just killed the conversation right there. Trust me, it's a bad four-letter word. So if you want to have a conversation, find any other word than talk. And so I said, I want to share something with you. Do you happen to remember a conversation we had about 13 months ago? Now, this was going to go one of two ways. It was going to be either yes or no. And if she said no, it would be going to be kind of weird, but she said yes. And I went through some of the things that she had mentioned and how I had looked at them and how they look like in my life and that, you know, I will still be doing this regarding you and so on and so forth. And we shared for an hour and a half and we talked about both of our different mindsets and so forth. There was no blaming. There was no excusing. There was just identification. And it came around. But I knew at that moment how important it was to separate the information from the emotional delivery when it came out. And that's what that big growing up kind of thing means to me in leadership. It's not always easy to do, but it makes you stand a little taller and less defensive. The other thing he talked about was vision. Interestingly enough, in leadership, he has this beautiful paragraph on sponsorship. He says, every sponsor is a leader. The stakes are about as big as they could be. A human life and usually the happiness of a whole family hang in the balance. So here's some of the things that are kind of the directives. So I'm going to use this in first person. What I as a sponsor, what I do or say, how well I estimate the reactions of my prospects, how well I time and make my presentation, how well I handle criticism. Trust me, they're always watching. And how well I lead my prospect on by personal spiritual example. Whoa. These qualities of leadership can make all the difference, often the difference between life and death. Sponsorship nuggets are in the concepts. So where do we go from here? Through service and the three legacies, I feel we must continue to develop and strengthen groups, not keep starting more meetings. We've got a gajillion of those, right? Let's start groups, contributors, develop that. We've lost that kind of enthusiasm of groups. That so that the three legacies are learned and demonstrated, so that sponsorship can be found, so that the steps are taken to recovery from alcoholism, so that recovery and living this as a way of life is seen, not just talked about. We're the heirs and heiresses of our three legacies. Recovery, the steps, unity, the traditions, the concepts of service. Are each of us reaching out to everybody, to all people? We've got to pass on what was given to us. Let your enthusiasm shine. Be that beacon to the millions who don't yet know there is a way out. Thank you. Thank you.